on demand.
Hi, I'm Jim Stroud. Welcome to the Recruiter's Lounge. The Recruiter's Lounge is a podcast of news, interviews, and commentary on the recruiting industry, and it was designed with you in mind. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your time in the Recruiter's Lounge.
You're in the Recruiter's Lounge today with Jim Stroud and my guest, Doug Beabout. How are you, Doug?
Good, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. Now, I know you have a pretty favorable reputation and well-known in the recruiting industry, but for the benefit of those few people who may be unfamiliar with you and your background, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in the recruiting business for nearly three decades. In that period of time, I've been a practitioner and continue to be till today. I've opened up four recruiting firms, sold them to my staff. I'm in the process now of running a sole practitioner with two researchers in Florida. And I also do quite a bit and have for about the last 15 years, quite a bit of training within the industry, both as a speaker at conferences, et cetera. But primarily I do in-house training, in-house consulting, and I've started up several hundred new recruiting firms from scratch. And so I get my feet in both camps, and people ask me if that's a 50-50 enterprise, and I say, no, it's 90-90. But it's fun, and I like it because both keep the other side sharp.
Okay.
It's hard for me to train and not practice what I teach.
Sure, sure.
And practicing makes me good at training, so.
Very good. Very good. Now, I know you do a lot of training. What significant impact has recruitment training had on today's recruiters? And then how much of these techniques do recruiters even retain?
Well, the first part of your question, I think that training is paramount to success in this business, and particularly today. In 30 years, the one constant that I've observed is that we always have to change.
Sure.
And it's because in a period of time beyond your control, if you're in this as a career professional, you're going to see shifting of the guard in terms of generations and hiring managers. Right now we have a whole new generation. Generation X is taking over the vast majority of the decision-making responsibilities within companies. Our candidate database, which is rather shallow now, it is in great demand by clients, and it is represented more today by Generation X and Y than the baby boomers. So You've got different generations bring different values, different generations bring different perspectives. And what worked well for most recruiters as little as 4 or 5 years ago is frustrating recruiters beyond belief today because the game is different and the players are different and the rules, quote, Chrysler, have changed. So I find that the training has a tremendous impact on our business, a very positive one. But the second part of the question, how much training is applied, I've only had the luxury of being able to observe those whom I have trained.
Okay.
And for those that I have trained, the vast majority, four-fifths or so or more, 85 or 90% of the people I have trained have been highly successful in this business and have applied what I taught them. And if you were to ask the most successful people I've trained, the top billers, the $600, $800 million billers that I've trained, they'd tell you pretty much just do what Doug tells you.
And, sort of a rule for life.
Right. Well, the point of that is that training is always effective and used by most recruiters if they just kind of relax and enjoy it.
Okay.
If they allow the training to just be the practical, common sense thing that it is. But one of the problems comes with the veteran recruiter, which is our biggest industry challenge right now, is we still have quite a few veterans from the pre-9/11 era. And the veterans who are so frustrated right now got used to making their income in a certain manner with certain disciplines, certain techniques, certain tactics, and from varying from one individual to another, a certain process. that process has to be changed today, and it's more difficult for the person who has earned a living or created a great living doing something a certain way and having to throw that out with the bathwater and start over again.
Let me ask you.
There are some fundamentals that haven't changed, but there's an awful lot. More has changed about our practices today than I've ever seen change before.
That brings a curious question to me. Say you have on one side, you have, for lack of a better word, I'll call it the old school recruiter, who basically just uses a telephone and a phone book and maybe a fax machine.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, you have the new school recruiter who uses the internet profusely, along with the telephone, to get things done. In comparison between old school and new school, which recruiter do you think would be more effective?
I think the third school works best.
Third school.
The third school. The first school, the old timers, the old school, the guys that just work the phone. In this marketplace, if they're working the phone as a relationship-based consultant to clients and candidates, they're probably going to do that much better than the person who is just out there trying to exploit the next sexy technology tool that comes along. There was a time, Jim, in the late 90s when a lot of these folks were labeled as e-cruiters, and they focused all their time using web crawlers and spiders and bots and going out and finding openings in companies by using technology-seeking tools, information-seeking tools. They did the same thing by scouring and sanding all the watering holes on the internet for candidates, and they were playing a lot of mix and match. And they were making good money doing that because that was a time when hiring was at a peak. Companies were hiring, you know, people with a pulse. And the selectivity of the recruiter, the selected skills of the recruiter, didn't have to be that sharp. But today, you've got companies who are trying to fill roles that are, because of the inherited past, complex, multidimensional jobs that require individuals who are truly unique to that role. And those kind of people just can't be found on a monster board or on a career site. And frankly, as much as there is a lot of hiring going on right now, the most successful recruiters in professional recruiting who are in a relationship, non-transactional, consultative role, those people are going to probably shy away from trying to fill every job a company has. Out of 10 openings, there might be one or two where it would be right and appropriate and advisable for that company to engage the services of a full-fee-based recruiting firm. And those, here's the catch. The technology tool users who did so well in the 90s need to wake up and smell the coffee. Because in that period of recession we had, Jim, a lot of companies who weren't doing much hiring and a lot of human resources departments who were not that, you know, buried in the task of hiring and filling jobs and doing their own recruiting were marketed to by the same companies that sold those technology tools to us as recruiters. And so they bought the technology tools, and they started the process that I think is a terrible term, but the process of poaching candidates and stuffing databases with every candidate they can get their hands on. So if they've got the plain vanilla, arcane, standard turnover kind of job to fill, they're probably pretty well positioned to fill it without us. But that does not prepare them any better than it did recruiters in the 90s to go out and custom recruit or surgically extract a qualified person from a potential source company and place them in a job where the multitasking, multidimensional skill set and proven ability to overcome problems exists. So that scenario I just described is where the future of professional recruiting lies.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned the changing landscape, and indeed it has changed quite a bit. But I'm starting to see a resurrection of something old, I guess sort of something old with a new face. I'm talking about the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, their compliance investigation, sort of coming around this time under the guise of the OFCCP legislation. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't know if the EEOC is operating under the guise of something that I guess it's...
Well, maybe that's the wrong word to say. That's just say. I don't want to get in trouble to say it's a new spin on it, so to speak.
Obviously, EEOC legislation's been around since before I became a recruiter, and it's been tweaked and turned and improved since.
Mm-hmm.
The OFCCP is fairly recent legislation that is now being administered quite closely, and inspections of vendors and employers has become quite an issue. Anybody who's in recruiting has to remember, are you there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm right here.
All right. Anybody who's in recruiting has to remember that we are third-party recruiters. We're third-party referral agents.
Okay.
We are people who, in the function of referral of candidates for employment, fall under the same restrictions and the same legislative issues that employers do. So we have to be educated. We have to be well-versed on all the legislation that could affect our right of referral, as well as the service we provide. And companies now who are just as concerned as they should be about being investigated by EEOC or by the OFCCP administrative offices, I think, frankly, are going to be looking at their recruiters and saying, are you aware of these laws? Are you certified in this area? Do you have certifications? And I know that having my professional certification as a CPC and CSP, my CPC rating goes back to 1981, and there are continuing education unit requirements through the National Association of Personnel Services and through ASA, the American Staffing Association, for people in personnel services who have this certification to maintain their currency with all of these matters, including other things besides the EEO and OFCCP, such as contract law and ethics and standards of performance and good conduct. And I, when I got mine in 1981, Jim, most recruiters asked me what it meant.
Right. And I think some recruiters that are listening now are wondering,
wondering what
it means.
A CPC, a certified personnel consultant. Well, frankly, it's a must-have thing. I think anybody who intends to be a professional recruiter needs to, number one, support and join the National Association of Personnel Services, or if you're in staffing, join the ASA, and get involved in certification for yourself, and continue the education units, attend the conferences, go to the training seminars, and be ahead of the game, because that new generation of hiring managers I mentioned some time ago is far more concerned about vendor qualification than their predecessors were. Maybe because it's a new generation and a new perspective, in combination with the fact that there is more enforcement in the wind than there may have been in the past 8 or 12 years.
So it's to a recruiter's competitive advantage to have to be certified in the CPC, you said, is sponsored by the by NAPS, National Association of Personnel Services.
National Association of Personnel Services, right. If you go to ASA.com or you go to recruitinglife.com, both of those websites, they'll lead you to the information you need to know about it. And I think that you'll see that in the wind as well right now, there are people within our industry, and I love this because when it's from within the industry, it has more merit to me. There is a movement underfoot right now that I hope to get involved with where there will be down the road, hopefully not too far down the road, certifications available to recruiters where EEO and OFCCP rulings apply.
Well, and, let me ask you this then. Are you in favor of regulation of the recruitment industry?
Well, not in general. I'm in favor of the certification process.
Okay.
Both as professional as well as legal and tactical certifications, such as the tactical, like the technology tool certifications. I think those are important. I think of greatest importance, again, is the professional certification. But regulation is a whole different matter to me. I really feel that if our industry takes the lead and does its own housekeeping and makes sure that it maintains a clean act in its services, there will be little need for federal investment in, or state investment in any kind of regulatory oversight. But I can say that if that doesn't happen, I can see looming on the horizon a return to more regulatory oversight in our industry. When I came in this business 3 decades ago, many state-level governments regulated personnel services. I was from Ohio at the time, and Ohio had a very stringent and very draconian regulatory office over employment services. You had to be certified by the state to manage a recruiting firm. You had to be tested, and there were limitations put on the amount of fees that you could charge. There were strict limitations and conditions under which you could offer a guarantee, and that you must offer the guarantee. So I don't think that it's something that I think it would be terrible if our industry were to be reticent or passive about this and end up back in that kind of a draconian regulatory environment. But again, I think our government leaders are smart people, and if they see our industry keeping its house clean, they're not going to see the need to do this.
Well, let me sort of be the devil's advocate here in this sense, because I know there are some recruiters who are probably listening and think that this is just much ado about nothing, that why is there even a need to have these type of laws? And for that, for example, there's a lot of talk about MySpace, and I know that MySpace is very popular for growing population here in the United States. Now, what would be wrong with me going into MySpace, doing a search, finding someone who's, a VP of marketing or an engineer or something, and just approaching them and say, hey, I found you online on this MySpace page, and I have an opportunity. Can we talk? I mean, what's wrong with that?
Well, the problem is not in the intent behind what you do, but in the places you do it and the tools you use to do it and the track record you leave behind you. If you go to MySpace, which I'm pretty familiar with from the standpoint of my own family,
mm-hmm.
I have 5 kids. 2 of them use it, and they use it as a social gathering place, like an internet cafe on the web. And for that purpose, it's fine. But if you go to MySpace looking for a programmer analyst or for an accountant, the problem is that that's not a professional candidate resource or database or candidate site. What it is a social site. So there are going to be references on these personal web spaces to race, national origin, religious preference, marital status, sexual orientation, and things that, because they're there, when you go out and you use MySpace as a sourcing or a candidate lead generation tool, you'd better be very cautious about what kind of search terminology you use, and you better be extremely cautious about documenting what you use for future reference, because when it comes to discrimination and acts of discrimination or suspected acts of discrimination, it gets down to a little different interpretation of the law. You've got to prove your innocence rather than them having to prove your guilt.
That's curious to me, because I'm thinking about those recruiters who run their own shop, they hunt the business down and they fill the position.
Yeah, like me. I run a sole practitioner's business now.
Yeah, now what if you have a client who says, hey, I want this individual with this skill set, and I prefer that they meet a certain demographic to sort of just say that I just want to meet a certain demographic.
Class, you mean?
Demographic of class, demographic of race, demographic of they have to be pretty with blue eyes, which I may not have heard in the past.
I don't think there's any law against preferring a pretty candidate, but I know that there is certainly. It's pretty simple, frankly. If you have a client that wants someone to do a job,
mm-hmm.
as a professional recruiter, you should limit your investigation of potential candidates to their ability to do the work and their suitable availability for employment and their practical ability to relocate where it's required and change employers and travel. These are the issues that are relative to qualifying a candidate. Now, if my client says to me, and I'll be very direct about this, Jim,
mm-hmm.
if my client says to me, Doug, we want a production supervisor, we want someone that will work second shift, and we really don't want to see anybody unless they're a black female,
okay.
That's touchy. that's very touchy, because by making that kind of statement, they are excluding people from other protected classes. So for me to be complicit with that request would be wrong and would be in violation of the rules.
But what if they're doing some, what if they're doing some sort of diversity initiative and they see where they're running short on black female applicants?
If they say we have a strong preference for someone who would qualify as a diversity candidate, that's fine. That's affirmative action on their part and mine.
Okay.
So that's the advice I would give. I will tell you that the big pitfall is you're in this business, and I'll get right down to the point again. You're in this business. You're on the phone. You're trying very hard. You're, as they call it, smiling and dialing every day. You're trying to get activity going. You're not going to get paid unless you make a placement. And you've got a client that has come to you now, and you think you've got a good company and a good job, and you can fill it, and they've asked you to do something illegal. My strongest advice, and I have preached this advice for the 22 years I have trained people, my strongest advice is this. You tell that client that you will go out and find someone who will work that job, will do that job, who can be available for employment, who they can afford to hire. You'll eliminate all qualification issues other than the fact that they like the candidate or they don't. But at the end of the day, they have to pick the candidate of their choice. You're not going to pick who they hire. But you cannot defer from referring. You can't avoid referring someone because of their protected class.
That just protects you from potential legal issues on down the road.
Well, it's not only a protection thing, Jim, and I don't want to sound like Joan of Arc here.
Sure.
But it, frankly, it's a moral issue.
Okay.
It's an ethical issue. I mean, our society, I think the United States is the greatest culture the world's ever had. We got our faults, but I think in the scheme of things, we're at the top of the heap. But when people do things like that, it just mars what we are. Plus, it's illegal. But I think that, you know, if you're in a business that's involved in changing people's lives, you know, Jim, there's three big impact issues in our lives: death of a loved one, divorce, and relocation. And oftentimes we get involved in one of those three.
Right.
So we are change agents, not just for companies, but for people's lives. And you have to take on a certain level of ethical and moral responsibility that you do that within the law and within common sense.
Doug Beabout, the ethical, moral recruiting guru and trainer. Thank you for your time in the Recruiter's Lounge.
You know why I'll tell you, Jim, and I'm happy you said that, and you know why I'm like that?
What?
It's purely selfish.
Okay.
I want to obey the law. Anybody does. But I also know it is the fastest, most assured, and long-term guarantee to wealth, longevity, referred business, and having fun doing this. I never want to worry about what I said in my last call.
And there you have it. Thanks again for your time in the Recruiter's Lounge.
Oh, anytime, Jim. If anybody would like to contact me,
please.
They can look at my website, which is pretty straightforward. It's www.dougbeabout.com. I welcome their phone calls, 350-398-4302. Or if they're in a technical mode and they want to refer to me or they want to contact me by email, it's pretty straightforward as well. db@dougbeabout.com.
Operators are standing by.
All right, Jim. Good luck to you.
Well, that's it for this show. You've been a wonderful audience. If you like what you heard, love what you heard, or just plain hate what you just heard, let me know. Your feedback matters. You can reach me through my website at jimstroud.com/podcast. That's jimstroud.com/podcast. So until next time, I'm Jim Stroud, and you're not.
Radio, Radio, Radio Talent Zoo.
Innovative audio on demand.